Welcome to the Teacher Nerds Podcast. Joe and Ron are self-proclaimed teacher nerds, geeking out on all things education. They are looking to move educational practices out of the 1900s factory worker model to a student-driven classroom full of empathetic, creative, and collaborative students willing to take risks. Join them as they chat with educators from around the world, discussing educational tools, techniques, ideas, policies, and much more. Thank you for listening and becoming one of the Teacher Nerds. And now a word from a sponsor.
Well, have you heard about the nerds? What's the word? Teacher Nerds. You can tweet them out on Twitter. You can find them on the gram. After listening to their podcast, you'd be sitting there like, bam! Trying to take the teaching from one level to the next. Reaching up to Canada and down to Mexico. Gotta go. Teacher Nerds. Start the show.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of the Teacher Nerds Podcast. I'm Ron Nober.
I'm Joe DiPaolo.
I'm a technology teacher for third grade to eighth grade.
And I teach third grade.
And today we have a guest, kind of a special guest for us. This podcast probably wouldn't even be happening without Chris Nessie, who kind of inspired me to take the jump in with Just Hit Record. Thank you for joining us, Chris.
I am very happy to be here. Ron, we've talked on social media. Joe, I'm going to be honest. I don't know if we've ever interacted, but I am very happy to interact with you on this podcast.
You know, besides just watching what you put out there, I don't think we've ever interacted either. But, you know, I know when Ron was like, yo, you got to check this guy out. And instead of us just having conversations at the end of class, let's like do something with it. And here we are. This is like 50 some odd episodes later.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Keep going. Keep hitting record.
We're getting ready for, I keep watching the counter. We're ready for like 2,500 downloads is coming up pretty soon. So
nice. That's exciting.
Yeah, it
very
is.
Very good to hear that.
I'm like watching it. I'm clicking refresh, you know, waiting for that 2,500 to happen. So Chris, would you just introduce yourself to the audience and tell them a little bit about your, you know, journey in education?
Sure. So I'm still Chris Nessie. It hasn't changed in the last couple of minutes. I am a husband, father, educator, and podcaster. And I put those things in that order because otherwise she'll be upset if I don't. That should be very clear to you and your audience.
Yes.
I wanted to be an educator ever since I was probably a junior in high school. And I was inspired by literally, I'm not, you know, trying to be cute here as a teacher, but I was inspired by the good teachers I had growing up and my father, who was and still is a high school math teacher. And that's what got me into education. And, you know, what he instilled in me in terms of, you know, helping others, volunteering and, you know, being giving of myself, what better profession where clearly you can get into it. You could help people. You become immensely wealthy and famous doing what we do. So I figured that's the life I want.
Get that teacher sneaker deal going on, right?
Yeah.
Hey, teachers wear sneakers too, right?
Yeah, every day. And I did see your post the other day, right? Didn't you post about something about the dress code?
That's right. So I've been virtual. We're recording this in the middle of March, 2021, and I haven't returned to school yet, but it's been a year and I haven't worn pants to my job in over a year.
Not something you could say as a teacher.
Not something you could say where I've taught my kids not wearing pants, but I wear gym shorts, t-shirts, and I go to meetings, the faculty meetings, the whole thing, you know, whatever. It is what it is. And I'm comfortable and I'm happy.
Right.
I definitely don't have as much of a social media presence as Ron. Sometimes I throw the tweets out there and I so second guess and I delete it. But I've been teaching in person since September, 5 days a week, teaching in sneakers and jeans and t-shirts. And I'm going to tell you, it doesn't stop the education. You know, like what goes on in the classroom isn't determined by if I have a tie on or not. So had I had a little more chutzpah, I probably would have responded to that comment. But I just thought, hey, he's coming up next week. So let's just, we'll save it for then.
Yeah.
Well, I will say again, as we're recording this, I'll be back in my school for the first time, just teachers in the building for a few weeks. And I'll be back in there on the 22nd. And I'm showing up in jeans and a polo. I'm upgrading to pants and a polo shirt.
Wow, that button.
Which, with buttons, I hope I still know what to do. But even before that, and I'll get back to who I am in a second. I'm not a shirt and tie kind of guy. You know, one time somebody tried to tell me, you know, Mr. Nessie, we have a dress code here. And I said, I don't care. I said, the last time I wore a shirt and tie was when I got interviewed for this job.
Oh, and, yeah.
You know, I don't dress unprofessionally. I wear slacks. I wear dress shoes. I wear pants. I wear polo shirts.
Right.
I don't come to school looking like the Wolverine got to my jeans. And, you know, I don't come in looking like a teenager. And you guys can see me now. I do not look anywhere near a young person at this stage of the game. I podcast because I have a face for radio. So, but back enough about me. Let me talk more about me. So I initially went to college to become a high school math teacher because my dad taught high school math and I liked and was really good at high school math. And I learned very quickly after about 2 years that college math is hard. And my dad tried to warn me, and like any good son, I ignored the advice of my father when he said, you know, the math you learn in college, you will never teach unless you go on to teach at the college level. And eventually got to the point where he said, you need to change your major or change what you want to do, because I can't keep taking time to reteach you the math over the summer in between the school years. So I chose history and social studies because that was the next subject I was interested in. I should have chose phys ed because that would be a lot more fun and a lot less aggravating than being a social studies teacher.
That's why I don't teach. Shaking his head.
Yes. Man.
And that's why I don't teach elementary school, because I would just play with the kids. You know,
no.
So that would be me. So yeah. I got high school social studies, and you know, the technology piece has always been a passion, designing flyers, graphic design. I like to tell people that I am a over 20 year Photoshop junkie, self-taught, no formal training, but I love graphic design, web design. I've been playing with it since I'm 12, 13 years old. And that has bled its way into my classroom to provide interesting opportunities for my students. I've had the opportunity to work at the middle school level, which I'll be honest, that takes a very special type of person to work in a middle school. And I'm not that special. So I work at the high school level. I currently, for many years, have taught ninth grade world history. I'm hoping next year to get out of ninth grade finally and maybe become a sophomore and teach some U.S. history. And in 2016, I also had the opportunity to start teaching at the college level. I don't teach education at the college level. I teach at Rutgers University in their School of Communication, where I teach courses in communication. So I teach technology to people who don't want to be teachers, but they want to go off and be social media marketers, and they want to be promoters, and they want to be IT personnel. So there's that technology piece. And I just bring my flair for presenting and communicating, all the things we're going to talk about, guys. I bring that to the college level, and I've been very fortunate to do that. And oh yeah, I podcast. So here we are.
Just a little bit. Just a little bit of podcasting in there.
Do you do anything to relax or fun, or is that, because I can't all be relaxing for you, right? It sounds like a lot of work.
I'm going to give that stereotypical answer that I do what I love, you know, teaching and planning. That's not work for me. Staying up late, editing a podcast, that's fine for me. You know, whether I'm doing my stuff or, you know, I am fortunate to edit for some other people. I enjoy it, you know. Even though I sit here at this computer doing 100% remote teaching, I'll get off at the end of the day. I'll go have dinner. I'll play with my boys. I'll hang out with my wife. And when they all go to bed, I come back and I sit down at the very same computer. And then it's my time.
Right.
I listen to music. I listen to podcasts. So everything I do is enjoyable. And if I didn't enjoy it, I wouldn't be doing it.
Gotcha.
Yeah. It's that creative outlet.
Yeah, exactly. It scratches that creative itch. But, you know, I like to go to the park. I ride my bike. I do CrossFit. I'm trying to become less round. And I've done that over the last, you know, 18 to 24 months. So I'm taking care of myself physically, which is helping me take care of myself emotionally.
Yep.
And as I just mentioned in my last episode, and I've been talking about this a lot, if we work on becoming better people, I'm not talking about professional development. I'm talking about personal development. If you become a better person, that will naturally bleed into your profession. So if you're working to constantly be a better person, you will be a better teacher by proxy.
Cool. Right. Hands down.
Yeah, for sure.
But I think that has to keep being said.
Yeah.
Over and over again.
Yeah. If you don't take care of yourself, how are you supposed to take care of children?
Yep.
Other people's kids, right?
For sure. All right. So thank you. We're going to jump into our, we do our two yes mores, one no way. And Chris is a sports guy. So we decided we're doing iconic sporting events, two that you'd like to have been at or been part of, and one that doesn't really matter to you.
It's time for two yes more, one no way.
Joe, do you want to go first or you want me to go first?
Ron, you can go first on this. Right. I have a pretty good one I'd like to end with.
Okay. Yeah. So my first yes is, and this comes from my childhood. I was born in 1972. I don't remember this event, even though it happened in 76. But my dad telling me about this event and then seeing it later on really just kind of does it for me. And it is the Philadelphia Flyers playing the Soviet Red Army ice hockey team in 1976. And yet, like, I can't think of a more, it's the bicentennial. We're in the Cold War. The Soviets have beat up on every single NHL team that they've come across in their tour. And then they get into the spectrum with, you know, that iconic Flyers team, the Broad Street Bullies, and they actually leave the ice in the middle of the game because it's such a physical game for them. You know, I think you know, I think it was they call it the Czech herd round the world. I think it was Ed Van Emp, you know, giving the check, and they just decided, you know, this is a little too much. We're going home. But they finally came back and ended the game, and, you know, Flyers won. But it was that to me is just like an iconic moment. And I don't think it, almost like a Rocky moment, you know, like 76, Cold War, the Broad Street Bullies. Flyers were so hated around the NHL at that time because of the Broad Street Bullies, but you had everybody then rooting for them to beat up on the Red Army team, you know, so that was a pretty cool one. And second has to be Eagles Super Bowl. You know, I would have loved to have been able to be there, you know, in the stands for an Eagles Super Bowl. One that, and it's not necessarily a specific event, but it wouldn't matter to me to be at really any kind of like NASCAR or auto racing. It's just not my thing. You know, I don't dislike it, but I don't know that it would do anything for me to be at one of those events. So that would be my no way.
Cool.
Chris, what about you?
Well, we're going to, in my yeses, we're going to see that we're from two different places in this country. Jersey. Yeah. So I'm a big New York sports fan, which is the complete opposite of you, Ron. And I'll be honest, even though I'm a guest on your show and it's kind of like me coming into your house, better. But anyway, so I am a through and through Yankee fan, and I would have loved to have been at really any game in the 1927 season and really seen that 1927 Yankee murderer's row lineup on any day where they just did what they did and just mashed balls in black and white all over Yankee Stadium. So any game in the 1927 season would be a yes for me. Another yes for me would be, I'm also a hockey fan, and I would have loved to have been in Madison Square Garden in 1994 to see the Rangers win the Stanley Cup in person. I remember at that time, I'm also a big Knick fan, sadly today, but back in the 90s, that was good times. I remember being, it was like the Sandlot, me and my middle school friends back in 1994, we were having a big old Sandlot style sleepover at my buddy's house. And it was right in the middle of that Stanley Cup final and the NBA finals with the Knicks and the Rangers going on their run. And my friend's dad comes out to the backyard and he says, "Hey guys, OJ Simpson's on the run." So we're like, what? So like, we're watching the Knicks, the Rangers, and OJ at this middle school sleepover. So just to set up, you know, the context, but definitely that game winner, that game seven against the Canucks, would love to have been at Madison Square Garden. And my no, I mean, I had my answer. NASCAR fits into that answer because I could get in my car anytime I want and I can go left. but for me, golf, I could care less about golf. I like miniature golf. I like a good pitch and putt golf, but regular full size golf, I am not old enough to play yet. So I could care less about golf.
Yeah. All right.
Agreed.
That kind of goes into that NASCAR, you know, just not your thing. Yeah.
Joe, all right,
bring it home.
So the year was 1989. The date was May 7th. The Bulls were playing the Cavaliers. And surprisingly, the Cavaliers were up with 3 seconds left, 100-99. And I remember watching this game on TV. So it's the Bulls and the Cavs. And if you were around in that time, even if you weren't, you probably know who the greatest basketball player of all time was. They get the ball in the hands of Michael Jordan. He goes left against Craig Elo, takes the shot, and actually makes it, winning the game and the series. I remember watching it standing like, holy crap. I couldn't. And as a basketball player, like, it's freaking hard to dribble with your right hand left, or as a right-handed player, dribble left and then shoot from the right with Craig Elo on his tail. Now, Craig Elo had a bad ankle, so he was one of the two injured players, whatever. The Bulls won. They took this, and I could just, you know, you could watch any video and it's that iconic fist pumping Michael Jordan throwing it down. So that's my number one.
That's a good one.
I thought, you know, like,
that was a good buildup too, Joe. I got to say that was you had notes and plans, and I think they were stage directions.
I tried to like really set the scene, you know, I tried to kind of be dramatic.
And your Jordan fist pump was on point.
I did watch that video a couple times to kind of get, cause he throws his shoulders in there. I mean, that's an iconic, I don't know. I'll never forget that. And to watch it, like to be there when that happened, I thought that was pretty cool through the TV. Excuse me. So my second one, as a Philadelphia fan, Dr. J's baseline scoop against the Lakers in 1980. Now, granted, they did go on to lose the season or lose the championship. I think it was 4-2 in the NBA Finals. I don't have that, but I know they lost. That's such an iconic under the hoop scoop. You know, he had those long arms and those long steps. And what's great is that Magic is under there, and, you know, Magic's end all be all, but Dr. J, you know, in his time was the man. So I thought that was cool. And I just remember, Ron, you talk about your dad telling those stories. I remember my dad talking about that series and specifically how hard it was to stay up to watch those West Coast games.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So that's my number two for my yes. And so, Chris, you'll appreciate this as a New York fan. My one no way encompasses all of the New York Giants Super Bowls, 1987, 1991, 2008, and 2012. Don't care. And 87 and 91 sucked because I guess it was grade school, the seventh or eighth grade, and then freshman year of high school, my buddy was a full-on Giants fan. So having to listen to him, but I think the Eagles might have won once during those regular seasons, if I can remember correctly. I don't have those notes. But so I'm so glad you said you're a New York fan. Because that
ties it all together.
Oh, man, it pulls it all together beautifully, Ron.
And that just shows that diversity between North Jersey and South Jersey. It is like two different states.
The 51st and 52nd state.
Well, you forgot that middle part of the state called Central Jersey.
As a history teacher, as a social studies teacher, do you believe in Central Jersey?
Right? I work in Central Jersey. I grew up in Central Jersey.
Oh, man.
Technically, I still live in Central Jersey.
Because what's the argument, right? Where is Central on the compass, right? There's North. This was just the arguments that go back and forth. Now, I feel I live in Central Jersey as well, you know, Burlington County. But it's interesting that you consider yourself Central Jersey and are the New York fan.
I do not consider Burlington County to be Central Jersey. Yeah. So
no
this
way,
might be a
really?
Whole other podcast. Not in the slightest.
All right. So maybe I have to reevaluate the map then. Are we?
See, I always do 195 as the cutoff.
Well,
that's north.
Considering you hate the Giants and it sounds like you hate everything New York, South Jersey is a Philly, like you're South Jersey, dude.
Well, but like,
here, I'll settle it for you. I will settle it. All right, Joe, it's Sunday. You go into your favorite bagel store delicatessen, whatever the case may be. You got your Burlington County newspaper, which again identifies you as South Jersey, but you go and you order a breakfast sandwich and you get it on a plain bagel. It's got meat and cheese, maybe salt, pepper, and ketchup, salt, pepper, ketchup. What are you ordering on that sandwich? What is the meat you're ordering?
Are we talking bacon or are we talking pork roll or Taylor ham? Is that the,
I don't give a crap about bacon right now. What meat are you putting on your sandwich?
It's pork roll.
A pork roll.
Okay, good. That's a central South Jersey thing. But because you're in Burlington County, South Jersey.
South Jersey, yeah. As a Philly transplant, that's where my true heart is. Growing up in Philly, and Ron talks about that game. I said this before, my mom was hit on by Bernie Perrant. So I feel like that's something I can't say enough as a, as a Philly fan.
We appreciate you entertaining us with our two Yes Mores, One No Way, and joining in, Chris.
So I like that game. That's fun.
We hope you enjoyed that segment of Two Yes Mores, One No Way. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in a moment. Are you and your students missing a class trip this year? Would you like to bring some animal fun into your classroom? Well, let Miss Amanda and Farm Friends LLC help you out. Farm Friends and her animals can pay a virtual visit to your classroom. They offer a variety of programs, like story time with real animals or science and nature facts. Miss Amanda even has a program about loving kindness. With their virtual visits, it doesn't matter where you are. Miss Amanda and the animals can come, visit, educate, and most importantly, spread smiles. For more information, to book a program, or to help support them by donating to their Amazon wish list, visit farmfriendsllc.com. Be sure to follow them on social media at farmfriendsllc. Oh, and don't forget to visit their YouTube channel for Storytime Tuesdays. Remember, that's farmfriendsllc.com. And now back to the show.
We should do a panel on Philly teams versus New York teams and see where it goes. You know, like, I don't know
what we'll have to. We'll have to. We can do that because my pal AJ Bianco and I, again, I'm going to talk about another podcast. We host a podcast called The Chase for 28, which is a Yankee podcast. We'd be more than happy to bring you guys on and reminisce about the 2009 season
and talk about the two Phillies.
Yeah. What was that? 2006 and what?
We could also.
The whole impetus for me, you know, reaching out to you and contacting you was I was sitting in the car in a Wawa parking lot listening to a podcast that you did on House of EdTech. Talking about the four season education. And I was just sitting there, single, bald, chubby guy in a car, yelling at myself and, you know, having people look at me. But there was so much that you were talking about on there. And it really resonated with me and resonated with just what Joe and I are all about. I mean, we talk about on our opening that we want to bring education out of the 1900s factory worker model of education. And bring it into the 21st century. And, you know, I always say it's 2021. So we're a fifth of the way through the 21st century. We need to speed up this move out of 1900s. You know, so that's kind of where we want to go and talk about with you and just get your, again, a little bit of your thoughts. If people hasn't listened to that episode of House of EdTech, definitely go back and listen to it. You know, could you just talk a little bit about what you were saying on that episode?
Sure. So again, for me, the verbs of my classroom are the four C's. So we're talking about creativity, communication, collaboration, and critical thinking. So here's where and how I think about social studies. My class, it's not about the history. I don't care about the history. Let me rephrase that. I enjoy history. Okay. I like to read about history, watch stuff. Okay. I like history. It's cool. It's fun. It's interesting. I don't expect my students to have the same love of history that I do. Okay. The same way a science teacher or a math teacher can't expect their students to love the content the same way that they did, that inspired the teacher to go to school and put in 4 to 5 years studying that topic, becoming a guru in that topic, and learning how to teach that topic to others. Our students aren't there for that purpose. Okay. So I think the four C's should be the verbs of every classroom. Now, you're going to find that you get students who also love the content like you do. And when you get those students, we get excited. You know, I'm a social studies teacher, I get a kid who comes in and says, I love history. I like World War II and I'm into, you know, these different eras. And that gets me excited. And I will nurture that kid and I will support that kid in their love of the subject matter. Okay. Same way a kid comes into math. You get kids who are really good at math. They like math. Nurture that kid. Teach them stuff. Give them the enrichment stuff. Okay. Don't dissuade them from liking the subject. But the far majority of the students that we work with, my job isn't to, and I'm going to talk about social studies specifically, my job isn't to A, make them fall in love with the subject, or B, get them ready to play Jeopardy. So now what do I do with them? My classroom for years now is not about memorizing names and dates and places, because even though I have a degree in history, I can't tell you what I learned in ninth grade world history, right? You know, there's a lot that I have forgotten, but here's what has stuck with me all these years as I approach, you know, my 40th trip around the sun at the end of April, 2021. It's the teachers and what they did that I remember. I remember the projects. I remember the relationships and the connections that I felt with those really great teachers. What I also remember that helps to inspire what I do each day is I remember the crappy teachers and how I didn't like certain things that they did. My fourth grade teacher, God rest her soul, she was a horrendous teacher. Her horrendous practices as a teacher, that has stuck with me all these years, is I never want to be that. Okay. And I've had some other interesting characters along the way, but the ones who made a positive impact on me because of how they cared about kids, that's what sticks with me. And long after most of my kids leave me, they're going to remember that Mr. Nessie was a good guy and we did all of this interesting stuff with technology. And that's what I want them to be able to do. I tell the kids, and I am very transparent with my students, okay, whether it's high school students or even the Rutgers students that I work with, okay, I want you to get better at the four things, these four C's that you already know how to do. Kids come to me, they're already creative. They know how to collaborate. They know how to communicate. They know how to think critically. My goal between September and June is to help them take steps forward in those areas. And how many steps they take in that school year, that's up to them. All I do is provide opportunities to practice and get better. And I create opportunities to work on their collaboration skills through group projects and how they're going to communicate and how they're going to present their knowledge and learning and understanding. The creativity, we're all to some degree creative. Creativity is a muscle, okay? Like you go to the gym, you work out, you can get stronger. You provide students with more opportunities to be creative and do creative things, they're going to become more creative. And I get them to buy into it because I tell them, it doesn't matter to me what you want to be when you grow up or what problems you want to solve in the world. If you can do these four things well, you'll be successful with whatever path you choose or whatever paths you find yourself on. I tell my students, again, at all levels, it's the name of the class. So this year, world history. What they don't put on the course book or the website or their report card or their transcript is it's world history and life lessons with Mr. Nessie.
I like that.
So they get history, but again, will they remember the world history, the names, the dates, the places, the vocabulary? Maybe, but it's been years since I've given a traditional test or quiz or homework. It's all projects all the time, working on those four C's. The closest thing I do to, and I'll put air quotes up, traditional history class is I do document-based questioning, where I give the kids primary source documents. Mm-hmm. But even then, a DBQ for a history teacher, that's like the ragu sauce in the kitchen. Everything's in there. They've got to read. They've got to think critically. They've got to analyze. Right. You know, they have to communicate their understanding of the topic. There is not necessarily a black and white right answer to a DBQ. To write that essay at the end. But you need to be able to think and make sense of what you've read. So it's the most social studies thing that I do. And even then, I try to find different ways to make that more interesting than just writing a 5-paragraph essay. Right. For example, we're doing one now. I got a student teacher with me this semester. He's in the early stages, so he's not 5 days a week. He's like 2 or 3.
Yep.
And he put together his own DBQ around legality and morality. And it's all about pirates.
Oh, wow. Cool.
And he's like, Nessie, do you think I can do this? I was like, you like pirates? He's like, yeah, I love pirates. I'm like, then let's do it. Let's see what happens. So,
but I think that's it. You have to have that mentality, right? Let's do it and see what happens.
Yeah. I was like, let's see what happens. The kids might buy into it. They might not, but you don't know if we don't try. I might have to come back and talk about my philosophy on working with a student teacher. So maybe we'll set that up for another episode.
Oh, yeah.
But to get back to the point, in doing that, they're going to analyze some documents. They've got to answer some questions about them. But instead of writing a 5-paragraph essay about legality and morality, we're asking them, and this was his idea, we're going to create ebooks. They're each going to create a children's book. Nice. Where they've got to create a story where a young reader could read their story and come away learning, what does it mean to follow the law? Or what is it? Mm. What are my morals? What are those two concepts? So I have to have my 9th graders understand it and then be able to, for lack of better words, dumb it down to a 1st or 2nd grader to understand that concept.
To a read aloud, to walk away with what was, and then the 3rd grade teacher or the 2nd grade teacher could say, all right, guys, what lesson can this character learn? So there's a lot more than going, you know, so you start thinking about other people's perspectives, right? And then they know what the project's going to be. I mean, are they going to get to interview? How many of them know little kids? Right.
Well, they all have like little brothers and sisters, or they've got cousins and stuff like that. So the opportunity could certainly be there in a couple of weeks or over spring break that's coming up to take this project. And I'm going to challenge them. I'll say, hey, you know, we got spring break next week. Take your project, read the book to your little brother or sister, or see if they can read it. Write it at their right. I will encourage them to write at that level and see if they come away. See if you were effective in writing a story and teaching a lesson.
And, you know, like you talk about that collaboration piece, right? Like it would be a very pretty fantastic collaboration to then take those stories and offer them to like Joe, who teaches 3rd grade, you know, one of the elementary teachers, and say, hey, you know, if you're teaching Joe, I know you teach social studies about like community and all that, mm-hmm. right? Hey, here's a story. Would you mind letting the kids read this and getting the takeaway from that? And a collaboration between the high school kids and the elementary kids. I mean, first of all, the elementary kids would be just thrilled that there were high school kids who thought of them, you know, gave it a thought. But yeah, that's awesome. And I think it is. It's hard to go to that perspective when you've learned something, break it down for such a younger group. What are you guys using, like Book Creator or something like that to do it?
Yeah, we're going to use Book Creator, maybe a combination of Google Slides. So we will, again, there's a lot of duct tape in the classroom too, where we just kind of feel things out and piece things together.
That's a fantastic project. Yeah. What are some other, you know, like kind of those where you are encompassing those 4 C's in, like, what are some other projects that you've done? Or I know you mentioned even like homework, you don't give traditional homework. What are some of the things that you do?
Well, to touch on the homework thing real quick, I don't give homework because I think, one, kids, they're being students, that's their full-time job.
Right.
And I have students who they go to school full-time and they work. Right. So I know I can't speak to what other teachers do. I know that other teachers I work with, they give homework and they probably inundate the kids with things to do outside of class time. I try to be respectful of the kids' time. All right. They're in school. They're with me. When the world is quote unquote normal, I teach an 80-minute block. If we can't get it done in 80 minutes, guess what? I'll see you tomorrow. Right.
You know, thank you. Because that's exactly my thought.
There's no urgency. And it's probably easier for me to say that because there's no standardized test in social studies. If I was a math teacher or a language arts teacher, maybe I can't get away with not giving homework. I would try, but you know, I tell the kids outside of school, that's your time. If you didn't finish it in class, you're welcome to continue working on something. Here's when the deadline is. Here's the due date. Here's when things have to be complete. So I will give you a timeline, which is me subliminally teaching time management to ninth graders, right? Am I flexible with due dates? Yeah. Does stuff happen? Sure. Do I mark things late? No, because if you turn it in 72 hours later, that doesn't change what you showed me in your project, which demonstrates what you know.
Again, you thank you.
You're welcome. Everybody listening, you are welcome. Yeah. Okay. If a kid's project is an A by the rubric, whether they turn it in on time or they turn it in the next day or 2 weeks later, I don't care. It's still an A. They still did the work. Who's, you know, sometimes it's going to take a kid longer. Why, again, pandemic aside, why aren't we just normally? Why isn't it the norm to show kids grace and empathy?
Oh.
And don't tell me you want to teach kids the hard life lessons of living outside of high school where the world is going to punch you in the face and knock you down. Sorry, it's not. The only thing the world isn't going to give you outside of grade 12 is multiple choice tests and all the stuff that we think is so important.
Right? Don't you think
when's the last time you guys personally? Took a
I think teachers take it personally.
I'm going to tell you, the bad teachers take it personally. So if you're listening to this and you love multiple choice tests, sorry, you're a bad teacher. Come at me. I'm not going to back down from that.
And again, how many of us, if you paid a, you know, whatever, something happened and a credit card bill got paid late, you would be calling the credit card company to say, hey, can I get that late fee deducted because I've been a good customer and, you know, this, this, and this happened. And you're going to expect that credit card company to do the same thing. So why not show it to the kids?
Here's something. Why don't we teach our kids how to make phone calls like that? Where do we learn that skill? I mean, some kids, they learn how to complain real good, or they see how mom and dad come in and complain to us about stuff. But where are we teaching kids how to really go live beyond grade 12? Yeah, okay, we got financial literacy. Whoop-de-doo. Even that class in most places is a joke, right?
Right.
Okay. So.
But yeah, calling and saying to Comcast, like, hey, my bill's a little too high. You guys, if you still want me as a customer, could you do something for me? And my wife is fantastic at it. Like she, I mean, honestly, she will.
But you know what that is in third grade? That's a persuasive writing lesson. And which, to toot my own horn, we just got through it. I got three girls meeting with the vice principal tomorrow because they want the playground opened up. And nice. And now the one little girl's remote. So they're like, oh, we don't want to do it. I said, no, we're going to see if we can get a meet going and we're going to get everyone on the meet. Oh, but we won't have time to practice. I said, well, then you practice during reading tomorrow, which is first period, and we'll set you up for the meet for third period. Because like I think you have to give them those opportunities. And if I do that in third grade and newsflash, fourth grade, fifth grade, sixth grade through high school, they get those opportunities. I think that's what it takes to really set them out into the world with like, all right, well, I've had experience with all this. Let's face it, the BS of the world, right? Like weaving your way through the world is freaking tough. So if you can give them those experiences in a safe learning environment where they can fail and then learn from those failures and not just go, damn, I got a 60. You talk about fourth grade. Fourth grade, I got my first failing test. My teacher actually picked me up and threw me down. I went from loving third grade to hating fourth grade. Loved my third grade teacher. Fourth grade teacher, you know, a lot of respect, but she wouldn't have made the cut.
I got to add two things, Joe. First, we need to make sure we do keep in touch so I can know which one of these three girls in 6 to 9 years is the class president. Because I'll tell you right now, one of them will be. If they stay in district and they follow the course, one of these girls is going to be the class president. And number two, your story of failure reminds me of a famous fictional Philadelphian, Philly's favorite son, who once said, life is not about how hard you get hit. It's about how hard you can get up. Go ahead.
You get up when you get hit and keep on moving forward. I mean,
that's how winning is done.
But you know what's great? The one little girl, she is feisty and you butt heads from the very beginning. And talking to mom, she's like, oh, she's such a little brat. And I said, well, hold on. Like, this is where if she was a little boy or if she was a grown man, she wouldn't be a brat. She wouldn't be,
a strong alpha male, right?
Most like, definitely. That's what we call it. I said, so our job then is to show her how to be strong, how to be confident in a world where people are going to be like, oh, she's mean. She's brat. No, she's a strong, confident woman. And when we gave her those opportunities, like she puts that foot on that. We were working collaboratively last week with our Fun Friday. They had to build something, a dragon out of paper chains. They got right to it. She's like, okay, you do this, I'll do this. And we'll all come back together in 10 minutes. Everyone ready? And I told her mom that. She goes, oh my God, did she do it in a nice way? I said, well, there was a time constraint. They needed to get work done. She organized a group of 8-year-olds and they got things done. Was a little boy upset because he didn't get what he wanted? Yeah, but he was on a team and you know what? He did it. He did what he wanted to do. And it was like, go.
See, you make a great point about somebody like that. And I just had my mind blown, I'll say in the last 2.5 to 3 weeks, about kids like that who, you know, are they bratty or do they run their mouths a little bit? Those parents are and have done a great job because those are the students and the kids who they feel confident enough and comfortable enough to fully express themselves. And they're not going to back down and be timid because maybe I'm dealing with an adult. Sure, we could teach lessons about respect and how to communicate right. More effectively. There you go. Communication, right? But the kid, think of how many kids, they're too timid and shy and don't feel confident enough to advocate for themselves.
Yep.
And I see it at the high school level. I still see it at the college level where, you know, I get students who they don't know how to make a phone call, speak up for themselves, advocate for themselves. Right. So we got to create those opportunities.
Well, and working in the, you know, in our special education classroom, I had a special ed teacher, awesome, awesome teacher. And I learned so much from working with her. That's exactly what she would try and get across to the kids. If you don't reach out and say, hey, I need help, or if you don't advocate for yourself, you know, no one's going to cheerlead for you in the real world. You have to say, hey, look, I need help, or hey, look at this. And I think that's why you have to give them those opportunities, because we're talking about tests. Not everyone's going to get hundreds on tests, but that doesn't mean not everyone doesn't have something awesome to show. You know, so you give them those opportunities to be creative, be smart, you know, work with other people and say, look what look what I have to show off. Look what I can do. And I think that's what's needs to be fostered. I think I would like to be in your history class. I do as a fan of history and just being creative. I would actually probably like school, you know, and as a third grade teacher, that's next week, we're getting into social studies and talking about different types of government. And it's a newspaper article. It's 4 different articles. And I'm thinking, what can I do? So I'm going to try and have the kids break up into groups and they're going to have to convince the class whether or not we're dictators or whether or not we're a democratic society or whether or not we're ruled by a king or queen. So I'm trying to set that up. But I think if I didn't, it would be like, let's read this. Let's answer these questions. Good. This article's done. Let's go on to the second article, answer the questions, done. Day 3, article 3, group of questions. Day 4, here's your quiz. I mean, put me to sleep. Idea? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Get rid of that program.
Yeah, get rid of the program. Bring everything to their level. You know, you start with like, you know, make it about video games, the things that are a part of their world, you know. If you have a way to bring in like Minecraft, or you could talk to these kids, like what's better, you know, Minecraft or Roblox, where can you build a better world? You know, where would you want to build a world? What kind of world would you build? And I bet you got kids who are Minecrafty. I got a third grader myself and you don't shut up about it. I have no idea what he's talking about, but I tell you, he tells me, he goes, I'm like, what are you doing with like this, again, 8-bit metal. He's like, I'm smelting it.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I'm like, smelting? I was like, do you know what smelting is? He's like, yeah, you take the metal I mine out of the earth, and, you know, I got to melt it down and make it into something I can use. I was like, let me tell you about Bessemer and Bessemer's smelting process during the Industrial Revolution, right? Which he's telling me this as I'm doing the Industrial Revolution with my 9th graders, and I'm like, my 3rd grader understands this better than my 9th graders because he's playing Minecraft. So I would have your kids build a society.
And so, I see people bringing Minecraft into the schools. I might even sat through a whole, Ron, I think at Texpo last year, I sat through it. I forget. It was just technology in the classroom and Minecraft was just a small part of it. And I'm not going to lie, I didn't pay attention because I'm like, I ain't into Minecraft, but I guess that's it. It's not about me. So
that's a big step. It's not, my class is not about me. I tell kids on day one, I'm not the smartest person here. And they look at me like, wait, you're the teacher. And I openly admit I'm not the smartest person in the room by myself. So each group of students we work with, that only happens once, right? They're going to go on. You're going to stay where you are. But that, what you do in that school year, that only happens once, except for the kid who stays back. Yeah. Then it happens twice, you know, but it's not about us. Well, I mean, I got girls this year who in meeting them again, virtually, they're like, yeah, I moderate stuff on Twitch and, you know, I game on Twitch. Yeah. And I'm like, cause they see my setup when I come on the Google Meet for the first time. And they're like, yo, mister, you look like a streamer. And I'm like, well, you're not too far off. Let me tell you a little story about me. So make it as much about them at any level as you can, because that's how they're going to buy in.
So
that's, yeah, go ahead.
Well, right now, if we don't have Minecraft, because, and I think that would be
Lego storytelling, have them physically do something, you know, get them arguing about stuff, get them debating, get them. And again, there was a lot of debate and argument in the origins of our government in this country. Get them to argue about stuff, get them to get fired up about what their passions are. You know, do they live in South Jersey? What do they think of Burlington County?
They love it, except for the one Giants fan we have.
And task that kid to convince others to come to his side.
Yeah.
That one Giants fan, that's George Washington right there. Yeah. Those are the founding fathers trying to convince everybody else, like, no, we're not doing the right thing. And see how I got the Giants fans to
I don't know if I heard that.
But even I was like, you know, come in and, you know, again, like to help simulate it, pick two students. They're the king and queen for the day. They do all the jobs. They can do whatever they can task out who's doing what. They can ask people to go get this for me. Go get that for me. Right.
We should make this a reoccurring call because this is what doesn't happen. And I guess there's no time built into our schedule, but to have the five third grade teachers get 30 minutes to sit down and say, hey, what can we do with this social studies program? You know, give us an hour. And then, hey, because it turns out Ron and I do these podcasts, and whether or not people, we want people to listen. We want everyone to be better. But at the end of the day, this makes us better teachers, you know, and I just wish this was our PD, giving teachers time to work on not just, okay, you have PD day, so we're going to do this and we're going to bring in this speaker. And I think that's great. But at the end of the day, what do teachers need? Time to work on things, you know, and specific
collaborate
chunks of time to work together and say, how can we make this program better for our students?
And you want to know who's better to ask than even your colleagues?
The kids.
Go ask the fourth graders.
Oh.
Go ask the fifth graders. The kids who, now they're 2 years past, a little more mentally developed. Hey, how would you make third grade social studies better, or science or math? You know, in some districts, mine included, you know, they make it a point to talk to seniors, the outgoing seniors. We want you to reflect, what was this high school like for you? As an opportunity to learn from our largest stakeholders, the biggest population, the students, which sometimes we forget that they outnumber us and they can also think, you know, we should be asking our kids. Again, even at the end of the year, at the end of the unit, you should be soliciting feedback. Okay. I've asked, I had two cohorts this year. I check in on them if we get not to get into like SEL stuff, but I ask them, you know, how's online learning going for you? What do you like? What do you like that I'm doing? And I'll take the feedback.
Yep.
And I've had kids tell me, they're like, Mr. Nessie, I hate projects. And I tell them, I hear you. Too bad. The alternative is test quizzes and homework. Okay, no, I'm good with projects.
Yeah, projects are fantastic.
We love them then. But I hear what they say, and I get feedback about the projects, like, what would you do differently? And that encourages the kids to think even more at that higher level about what they just did and what their experience was. We want kids to be reflective and be able to communicate them all sorts of opportunities, not just for a grade, but just for feedback. Why not?
Well, again, just in that, you know, we're tying back to like the four seasonal, you're getting critical thinking. They have to reflect on how things went. They have to then know how to communicate it with you. And I'm a big fan of, when I give a project grade, I tell the kids, look, this is the grade I'm giving you. if you think you deserve something more, come to me, right? Come to me respectfully, but I'm willing to sit down. And there are a lot of times where somebody may look at the rubric and say, hey, Mr. Noble, look, I did this. You didn't really notice it, but look at what I did. And they'll provide me with evidence. I'll change your grade.
Well, Ron, I know we've talked about it before. That's what's great about being in third grade. It's a double-edged sword, but I have those kids all day. Right. So when we talk about their writing and, you know, you talk about using the rubric, I can sit down and talk and say, well, I would score you at a 2 on this rubric because this is what I see. Can you show me where you and sometimes they say, no, I agree. Or sometimes there might be, oh, well, yeah, I was going to put that in there. So, all right, well, if you think you can put it in there and bring this 2 for a 3, go for it. But I have that time, you know, yeah. And I'm not saying we have all the time in the world in there because by Monday at midnight, we got grades due. So, you know, we need those deadlines. But to be able to sit there and talk to them about it, I think that's everything. And that's where they'll learn. You know, I can't just go to my boss and be like, you know what? I don't agree with what you're doing. And I think you suck. That's not going to get you too far. But if you can sit down and say, hey, can we talk about this? Because at the end of the day, that person's still your boss. And I know we've talked about it, Ron. They don't care how you're feeling, right? In the real world, you have a job to do for most bosses. And you got a job to do. I don't care what you think about the problem. I need you to solve the problem. So I think it's good to teach them, you know, how to talk to someone who's your quote unquote boss or a higher up.
Well, bad leaders don't care about people, right?
Okay.
If you're an effective leader, you care about the people in your charge, right? By the way, I teach a course in leadership at Rutgers.
So as I guess, yes, you do because and I, it's the guy who's in charge of Virgin Records.
Branson.
Branson.
Yeah. So, and he said, if you take care of your employees take care of you. Like the customer's not right. Your employees are right.
Well, it's all from, again, like it's that top down, right? Like you look at a place like Chick-fil-A who, you know, like customer service wise, they're supposed to be one of the best. They're got pretty happy employees, but it's top down. The leadership is a good leadership, a good management team, a good management structure and style. They treat their employees well. The employees in turn treat the customers well. Customers come back. Like, I mean, that's what it's all about.
I guess I should stop saying that all. I guess I should rephrase it. Bad leaders don't care about how you're feeling.
Well, I think your point was that you still have to get a job done.
At the end,
I think that was your point.
Yes. And over the past year, I will say our principal, our vice principal, have been very sympathetic to teachers and students and parents about what everything has been going on. So I guess but at the end of the, yes. And I'll just stop it there because I don't want to get myself into trouble.
Can I throw out a story? Because I don't care if I get in trouble.
Yeah, sure. Definitely.
I had a friend of mine, not in my district, but he reached out to me. We're pretty close. And he tells me, he goes, you're never going to believe what happened. I said, what? He said, we got an email. We're starting to think about next year. Also works in a high school. And he says, got an email about they're looking for advisors for the incoming class, you know, the next group of freshmen that are going to be coming in. And I responded to the request by saying, you know, I'd be interested to find out more about being a class advisor, you know, at the school. So I said, oh, that's pretty cool. You'd probably make a really good advisor. He goes, let me tell you what happened. He goes, I get the email from this vice principal and I respond to the vice principal by just putting in the vice principal's last name, exclamation point. I'd love to learn more, like just really excited, enthusiastic. The reply my friend got from this administrator was, when writing a professional email,
oh boy,
you address me as, I'll leave the gender out, but you address me with my title, blah, 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 blah. And that was the response to this person being excited, right, about maybe considering to be a class advisor. What are we doing here?
Right.
What are we doing?
Yeah. You're just, well, that's it. I mean, you just took everything that person, all the excitement and just crushed it.
You let the balloon go.
And my friend said to me, yeah, I'm out. I'm not pursuing this any further.
Yep.
I said, good. Better use your talents and service and time elsewhere.
Right. Yeah. And I think that, again, talking about like communication, you know, that's somebody who the vice principal may not be understanding communication as it's moving forward, because I have my eighth graders had to create a production team. So they had to create a production company, logos, production company name, and they're producing media in Wii Video. And I have three girls who are collaborating as a team. They have put together two entire videos in a breakout room in Google Meet. Not once has their audio been on to talk to each other. The entire thing is in the chat. And, you know, I've had even, you know, some of our administration talking about like, well, you know, why aren't the kids talking to each other? And I said, they are. There's a massive chat going. And like, well, they're not talking to each other. I'm like, but they're talking to each other on their level and the way they communicate. You know, why don't you
have them have their... It doesn't matter how the message gets delivered at this point.
Right. You know, why don't you have them have their camera on? Because you know what? I was 12 or 13 years old once, and I didn't want everybody staring at me either.
Could you imagine that? As a 13-year-old boy, I had braces, I had zits, I had a big fat nose, like, oh God, it was a hot freaking mess. I hate, or it could have been that
You're
time.
You're beautiful now, Joe.
I was in the Tony Hawk. So I had a big swoosh coming over, you know, oh my God. And the cut, like the last thing I'd want to do is be in front of a camera, because I'd have, you know, Clearasil. Clearasil, yeah. Right? And using the wipes. I mean, that would be horrible. And when we go remote, I call a kid. If you don't have your camera on and you're not answering, yeah, we might have to have a conversation. But you know what? You don't have your camera on. I call on you. You're able to talk and respond. Good for you. I wouldn't want my camera on either. I'm the teacher. I freaking got to have it on.
But yeah, I mean, that's a big debate too. Like, you know, cameras on. And what I will do is, if I have a student who decides to put their camera on and whatever, I will say, hey, thanks for putting your camera on. Love to see your face. It's always a joy to be able to get to see your face. And then you know what happens? Little by little,
they turn the camera off.
No. Yeah. He's like, he's creeping me out. But no, like another camera will pop on, or, you know, something. And that's it. Like, I don't, if you're doing the work, you know, it's like working at Google, right? They don't care what time you're working on the project. They care that the project's getting done and completed.
Well, going remotely, can you give the kids work? Or do you have to make them on from 8 to 3? Right. Can you make yourself available to meet with them if they need help? But if they don't need help, why waste their time?
Yep.
That's freedoms though, right? That's responsibility. Why let the kids be free and have responsibility?
And again, you might not be learning anything there with like time management and, you know, asserting for yourself and all those kind of things. So.
But that's where we can advocate for them. So this last week, we had those beautiful days of 60, 65. It got, I'm out here at the Jersey Shore. It was like 72 degrees, right? So I knew that where my kids are, I don't live where I teach, but we're supposed to, we have half days, and then we're supposed to have these afternoon meetings where attendance isn't required. But if we invite kids, they are encouraged to attend. So they were asking me, oh, Mr. Nessie, do we have afternoon meeting today? Who are you inviting to the meetings today? And I said, nobody. For the 25 minutes I would have to have my meeting, you go do something outside. It's going to be a gorgeous day today.
Right.
Go outside and play. I don't care what you do. I was like, I'll be honest. I don't care if you sit inside and play video games. Open the window. Let the fresh air in. Go for a walk. Play with your little brother or sister. Go take care of yourself. Go do something fun. And they're like, well, what are you going to do? I said, I'm going outside of my driveway and I'm going to play basketball with my own children. We're going to go outside and play.
Right.
For, you know, at least 25 minutes. I was like, I don't know if your other teachers are going to cancel the second afternoon meeting, but I'm giving you 25 minutes to go do something for yourself.
Go be a kid.
Right.
Go be a kid.
And again, you also got to seem human there, right? I'm going to go outside and shoot basketball with my kids. There's a little bit of connection. So before we get to any wrapping up, we can't go through this with not out talking about creativity, collaboration, communication, critical thinking, and podcasting, and bringing that into the classroom somehow with projects or anything like that. So you know, how would, I'm going to give you a hard one. How would you, if say you were a math teacher, could you bring podcasting and creativity into a classroom for math?
No,
no.
Okay. Totally kidding. I'm totally kidding. Of course you can.
All right. So
of course you can bring podcasting and creativity into math because, oh, I don't know. Again, I'm almost 40. I do DIY projects around the house. You need math to be creative. Okay. Where I put my basketball hoop on my driveway and I dug out the earth to nestle my basketball hoop into the thing. I had to think about geometry and go get the pressure treated lumber and figure out how much I needed and encase, you know, the cutout so the dirt doesn't collapse. You need math, right? So we've established that. What can you do to be creative with math? I don't know. Kids are doing these stupid word problems and whatever the new math of 2021 is. You expect them to write about math. You could get them to talk about math. Okay. Math is everywhere. Like art is everywhere, right? Want them to podcast? Just get them to talk about math. Get them to explain their thinking by speaking out loud.
Wow.
Which is so, a great right? way.
There you go. I was going to say, there's the podcast title for everyone. Math is everywhere.
Talking about math.
Yeah. I was, as soon as you said DIY, I was thinking like, man, how many DIY YouTube videos or things have I watched where it's math involved? Create a math involved tutorial, you know, and it shouldn't revolve around doing a math problem necessarily, but bringing math into something everyday life.
You want to create a resource library? Again, any level, any subject, get your kids to create content about the content that you can use in future subsequent years with future students.
Mm.
Hey, Billy, talk about Pythagorean's theorem, you know, the Pythagorean theorem in audio, or do a screencast, explain it, demonstrate it. Now you've got a video you can use and post next year.
And it's right? on their and level kids be from like, someone. Yeah.
That's pretty I like awesome. That one.
Yeah.
We use video all the time.
Video, you could do audio in there. You could podcast in there. And again, Joe, you're working with third graders. We don't have to have third graders producing NPR quality podcasts.
Right.
Right. They don't have to be in Spotify and Apple Podcasts and everywhere else you could get a podcast. But we can get third graders to write a script, learn how to record audio, learn how to edit audio, play with graphic design software. They can learn the skills. And then if a kid falls in love with it, hey, go start a podcast over the summer. Go try out Anchor. Go be on Spotify.
That's not if they fall, like when they fall in love, because they know how to do things, you know, and they watch the YouTube videos. They know what a good video has. And it's just given them that opportunity. After this podcast, I got to download one of the weather videos for tomorrow that we put on our morning announcements. And we have, in addition this week, a little boy is coming in at the end of the video and giving a fun Friday fact at the end of the video about this day in history. So it's because now the little girl was so worried today. Is he coming down? It was the period before the period we were. He's not coming down. When is this going to get done? And I'm like, whoa. He's coming down in half an hour. And she's like, oh. I'm like, we haven't hit time yet. So no one knows how to tell time. It's like, she was so worried that it was. So you know what? She cares about it. She's excited. It fits right into our science curriculum. And it's outside of science. They're still doing it. So it's like, you give them the opportunities. And like you said, they run with it. They're into it. And I'm hoping that'll start to grow. I want to have a full-on news network at third grade. It's baby steps. So, and we've started before we were crawling on our belly, and the kids have definitely gotten to that crawling stage. Some of them are starting to take those first steps. It's a cool process. And we've been remote. We've been in, we've been back and forth. I'm supposed to have four adults in the room. We're lucky when we have two. So it's a hell of a year, but you can't stop.
And by the time you get it figured out, it's going to be June.
There you go.
hope that's fingers crossed. I'm hoping to figure it out by June.
And Chris, you have a new book out, right?
Well, we can use the word book loosely. Okay. I don't want to misrepresent those who write actual books, because what I recently, again, this actually came out of what I do at Rutgers. So it's a capstone course for the minor is DCIM, digital communication and information media. So this capstone course is the culmination for these kids who are getting this minor, right? And the capstone, I encourage them to create something and do research, you know, college level stuff. But I had to put my money where my mouth is. So I had been consuming content on TikTok University, which is just, I consume a lot of stuff on TikTok. And I was inspired by somebody who was like, it's very easy to create and self-publish. And this person was talking about like a children's book, like a 100-word book, right? And one video they mentioned creating a journal. So I thought, huh, I think I could do that. So I spent an evening, probably 3 hours, and I designed what I call the Pod Journal. And the Pod Journal is a journal for podcasters to organize and plan and reflect on their podcast. It's great for somebody who is starting a podcast or somebody who is already podcasting. It will help you literally plan 100 episodes of a podcast. It will encourage you to plan new ideas for future episodes and reflect on episodes you've done. And it put me through the creative process of designing what a page would be. What would I want in a journal like this? So I went and I looked at other ones and I was like, don't like this, don't like this. That's dumb. So I made what I would want for myself in this product, because it is a product. It's for sale on Amazon.
In one night.
In one night, I created it. And then the next day, in talking to some of my college kids, they helped me make it better.
Oh, cool.
Nice.
And inside of a weekend, it was published and approved, and it's for sale on Amazon. It's called The Pod Journal. You can find it at thepodjournal.com. Nice. And that takes you right to the Amazon page. So it's great for any podcaster of any age, of any genre of podcast. And it was a good exercise for me in creativity. Somebody who's interested in writing their own book, like a real book, you got a story or there's a book in you, it's an easy process to self-publish. Okay. You don't need to go out and, again, there are a lot of education books out there. So I've been telling educators like you guys, like if there's a book in you, write it, find somebody to help you edit it and go publish it yourself. You don't need, and I'm not throwing shade, but you don't need, you know, Dave Burgess and the pirate books. You don't need Dave's publishing company. You don't need, you know, a guy like Mark Barnes and, you know, some of these other self-made publishers. You can do it yourself. Right. You know, because if you don't have a book that fits in with what they're looking to do, but there's still a book in you, go do it yourself. Promote it.
And it was it the Kindle
KDP. Like so Kindle Direct Publishing, the book, yeah, okay. The Pod Journal, that doesn't mean you're putting it on Kindle.
Right.
It just allows you to, you could create a physical book. And if you had like a story in you, you could make it available for physical print. Or you could make it available on the Kindle. You could sell it two different ways. Mine, I've only made available as a physical book because I love technology, but I think there's something to be said for sitting down and writing with a pen or a pencil.
Yeah, most definitely.
For sure. For sure. Yeah, it's awesome.
I found it. I'll be getting it.
I was just looking at it. Like the templates really, it's not overly complicated, right? The template is just what you need, you know, nothing really, really else that you don't.
You know, that's awesome. My mental health thing the past couple months, I'm building a wooden surfboard and I've started one. I'm just about finished and I'm going to start a second one in my garage. Right now I'm building it with my friend who's built about four in his barn. So I'm like, yo, let's write this down. Let's put it out there in the real world. And because people are charging money and they don't tell you, you know, my buddy brought the plans and it doesn't tell you all the intricacies about things you should do and troubleshoot. It's a big design thinking project because you go to glue things and you're popping things in and other things are popping out and shooting them across. You're like, what do I, how does, and it's freaking awesome. And right now it's just piece of paper and my scribbling and taking pictures and everything. But hey, I think instead of just putting it on Google Docs and throwing it out there, yeah, gonna check that. What's it? KBR? You put it down, Ron?
KDP, Kindle KDP. Direct Publishing. And again, you know, they walk you through, like they'll help you. They'll tell you how to format the pages, whether it's Google Doc or Microsoft Word. I spent the most time in this project designing the cover and making sure, again, 20-year Photoshop junkie, but to fit the specifications of what the cover needed to be based on how many pages the book was going to be, it needed to be exact. So I spent more time designing and working on the cover than the guts of the book. Because again, the guts of the book is three different kinds of pages, one of which appears 100 times.
That's a book. There you go. No, but that's awesome. And like you said, I think it's so cool to, for students, whether they be college or even like, you know, your history students, to see that the teacher's actually going to try and learn something new and different and, you know, maybe struggling. And I think that was when we started doing the podcast, that was a fun thing to, a fun journey to be able to share with the kids about how the podcast journey went. And you also have a podcast now with your son.
I do. Thank you for bringing that up, because it's funny, literally. So my son, he used to, Ron, do you remember the podcast he used to have? Are you familiar?
It was just his name, wasn't it?
It was the Vacuum Miles? Show, the Vacuum Podcast.
Oh, the Vacuum Podcast. Right. Yep.
So he retired that podcast a couple of years ago. He still loves vacuums, but he just didn't want a podcast about it anymore. And I was like, that's cool. And then he's gotten into joke telling. Kid thinks he's funny. Third grader thinks he's funny. Joe, you can relate, right?
Oh, most definitely. They're funny. Love them, especially Giants fans.
I see what you, that's called a callback in the comedy world.
Nice.
So I asked my son, I said, son, how would you like if we started a joke podcast? Because he's got a whole bunch of joke books. And he was like, all right, that sounds cool. He goes, what will we do? I was like, we'll just tell jokes. We'll tell knock-knock jokes to start. So we created the Knock-Knock Who's There and Other Funny Stories podcast with Chris and Miles. That's out there. We batch record. It comes out 3 days a week. It's family-friendly, student-friendly, classroom-friendly. You could play these jokes for your kids, your own kids, your students. And if you guys, teachers who are listening to this, if you're thinking, what could a child podcast about? Here's an example.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Yes, he's got dad helping with some of the production, but he's got to take his book and figure out what jokes to tell. He does all the planning.
Yeah.
You know, when we're picking which knock-knock jokes we want to tell, I let him decide. Do you want to be knock-knock or do you want to be who's there? He makes all those decisions. And I'm his second fiddle. Mm-hmm. Right. So it gives us an opportunity to sit down for a few minutes each Sunday. We record. He gets in. He gets to see me edit. I'm going to eventually work him into editing now that he's, you know, nine. And eventually he'll be doing some stuff. And these are skills that he will have.
That's awesome. And I think it's what I liked really about it and being able to show it to other students is a podcast doesn't have to be Joe Rogan, you know, 3 hour rant podcast, right? His stuff was a minute. Like they were minute podcasts and they were awesome.
And he told his teacher about it. Again, he's been remote this whole time as well because I'm home. We just kept both of my boys home. So on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, his teacher is subscribed and she plays the podcast for the kids in the room and the awesome. Kids at home. And yeah.
Yo, cool, he'll be walking in support. Next year doing autographs and like taking selfies with people.
Well, you know, when we ran those commercials, Ron, last year for Danny, and we had a little boy who was collecting books for less needy, less fortunate people, we would walk around the school. There'd be eighth graders like, Danny, hey, Johnny, look, there's Danny from the commercial. And this little kid's walking through, he's like, hey. And once again, I mean, now granted, this kid was really, really bright and really got a lot of high grades, but socially was all the time, I don't want to say a lot of times playing by himself. So it's just really cool now. Like people were coming up to him. He's now remote, but it's just really cool to see that sense of community come together. Yeah. And if we didn't throw those commercials out there, if the kids didn't put themselves out there to showcase to the whole school, they'd still be in their little bubble.
And I think podcasting, you know, just as we wrap up, podcasting is a nice way to go because so many kids don't want to be on the camera necessarily, right? So just the audio is a nice means into putting content out there.
Yeah.
And there's also the fact that podcasting isn't just about who's on the microphone, right? If we go, reference those NPR shows, there are people who make those shows happen that are never heard.
Right.
Your graphic designers, the researchers, the script writers, okay, the people who create the music, right? Yep. You're going to have kids in your classes, again, any age group, they like music. Maybe they make their own music. They don't want to talk about anything, but they could write you a theme song.
Right.
They could come up with little jingles and things. So podcasting is the ragu of all of education, because you could do every aspect of education within a podcast.
Awesome. Hey, Chris, where can people find you social media wise? I mean, I know you're everywhere on social media.
Well, I am everywhere I want to be. Could I be more places? Sure. But I don't have time for all of it. Connect with me on Twitter. I am at Mr. Nessie, M-R-N-E-S-I. My website is chrisnessie.com. And that is the hub of all things, the House of EdTech and me. And connect with me on Twitter. Reach out to me. All right. I love to connect with people. So if you're thinking, oh, here's a guy, it was great to hear from him, but I can't reach out to him. You can reach out to me. Send me an email. Go to my website. I Google Hangout and Zoom with people all the time about podcasting or the four C's or coming on great, great shows like this one. I love to share. All right. And if you want to give me the opportunity to share with you, all you have to do is ask.
I will attest to that. Like I've reached out a few times and, you know, I think there was one time where I was like House of EdTech listener, you know, and I was like, oh my God, look at, yo, I was on the House of EdTech podcast. I came home. My wife's like, what? I was like, no, but you don't understand. Like, I listened to this and my name, he said my name.
He said my name.
So yeah, you definitely do connect with people when they reach out. I can attest to that. So, and I appreciate it. And I just want to thank you for, inspiring us to even start this.
Yeah, definitely. And and coming on for an hour and a half and talking the talk.
It's a lot of fun to yap about this stuff. That's why I'm good with a microphone. I appreciate the offer. And anytime you guys want to chat on the podcast, off the podcast, we're friends now.
Cool, man.
We are friends.
We appreciate it.
Yo, maybe we can get to like a Phillies Yankees game, you know, I don't know.
Ooh, there you go.
Something. Well, you know,
I know at ISTE one year you met at Pat's or Geno's.
Yeah. The last ISTE in Philly, I ran a cheesesteak meetup.
Yeah.
And, no way.
It was delicious.
See, you got a little Philly in you. If you're loving the cheesesteak.
When it comes to cheesesteaks, I got a lot of Philly in me.
Again, Chris, thank you so much. Just really appreciate having you on.
My pleasure, guys.
Teacher nerds, knocking on your door. Open up, let's take your teaching further than before. Give it a try, don't be shy, there's nothing there to lose. Worst thing that happens, kids get pain on their shoes. We're talking teacher nerds.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Teacher Nerds Podcast. Keep up with every new episode by subscribing on Apple Podcast, Spotify, Google Podcast, Anchor, or anywhere you listen. When you subscribe, be sure to give us a review and tell a friend. Visit us at teachernerds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Teacher Nerds, on Instagram at Teacher Nerds Podcast, or email us teachernerds@gmail.com. And remember, we're nerds with a Z. Most importantly, thank you for listening and becoming one of the Teacher Nerds.